Hello and welcome to Will You Still Love It Tomorrow? I'm Annie.
And I'm Dave. Each month we take it in turns to nominate a film, TV show or book we were a fan of before we were married and the other one doesn't really know.
Then we both watch or read it and come together to discuss our reactions. Fair warning, there will be spoilers.
Okay, so before we even start, there's a couple of things that we should probably mention.
Okay.
The first one of which is for the very first time, there was a DNF.
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, fair. Do you want to read out what it says at the very top of my notes in capital letters?
Dave will hate this! Exclamation mark, exclamation mark.
Yes. And he did.
I did not. Hate is a strong word, but I did not watch all of the thing. So that was one very brief thing at the start. The second thing was I listened to one of our previous shows recently because I love listening to our podcast back on.
Dave is our biggest fan.
I am our biggest fan. And it was the show for Dickensian. And I noticed that you did not edit at all. You just loaded the show, basically.
Is it the wrong file?
I don't think so. I think it's just comedy value that you've left all of the funny bits in.
Okay, I might have to check that.
So listeners, you may get a version of this if Annie can't be bothered to do the editing that contains unscripted and unsolicited responses to this film that I did not like. So we will wait and see how it goes.
Okay, I'm really now confused back to
regular performing this month.
Yeah.
And his choice was the 2005 film Domino, starring Keira Knightley. Why? Dear God, why?
Well, I think the only explanation is that some kind of alien parasite took over my brain and convinced me that I liked it in the first place.
Okay. I mean, maybe you did like it in the first place and possibly your likes have changed.
To be fair to my brain, literally the only thing that I remembered about this film was Keira Knightley with bare midriff and nunchucks, and that was still epic, and I fully enjoyed it for
okay.
the very brief moment in the film that was the case. And that was it.
Okay.
So, I was going to say, what were your thoughts overall? But we already know, because you got, 40 minutes in?
Yeah, so it's a two-hour film. I got about 40 minutes in on the first night and thought, I need to take a pause at this point. Because it had got quite late at night and my brain was already kind of clawing its way out of its ears. And so I decided to come back the next day to finish it, or at least watch the next bit. And then the next day when I fired the film up again, I was like, no, I'm not going to do that.
That's entirely fair. At about the 40-minute mark, I wrote down, my eyes are bleeding and I need to scrub my brain. And then further on, it says, I'm halfway through and I can't remember my life before starting to watch this film.
Okay.
So, yes.
So I guess, going back to the script, how did it hold up for you overall?
It was awful. It was so bad. Full disclosure, I absolutely broke my New Year's resolution and I watched the second half on double speed.
Oh.
If you want to know what happened in the second half, I can't really tell you because it was very confusing and very squeaky and went by in a flash, and that's its only saving grace.
And I didn't even watch it.
Yeah. Do you want to attempt a plot synopsis?
Oh, gosh. So, Keira Knightley's character, Domino, starts off in some kind... Well, there's bits told in flashback, so I'll tell the story in the chronological order of her life.
Well, you don't need to go through her entire existence. Just a couple of lines to tell the viewers what it's... listeners, rather, what it's about.
Well, I'm just saying this is not the order that things happen in the film when you watch it. But yeah, she starts off in a prep school. She becomes a model. She decides that she's had enough of this boring life and so wants to go and become a bounty hunter.
Uh-huh.
And so goes off and theoretically chasing down people for bounties for court cases. But the way the film actually starts is something to do with retrieving a large amount of money that's in a safe where the combination is written on somebody's arm that her and her crew have chopped off for no apparent reason.
Yes, there was no reason for that to happen.
So there is a random severed arm in the first like
5 minutes.
5 minutes.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was a thing.
That was a thing. Yes.
So
It's all actually about a weird case. It was not really a case. It's the person who sort of runs their agency sets up a kind of a scam where he hires people to rob an armored truck and then gets the person who owned the money to agree to give him a finder's fee for finding the people who robbed the armored truck, but it was actually his people who robbed the armored truck. And it turns out that the person who owns the money is connected to the mob, and so a lot of people die. And that's basically it.
okay, I've got a note in my notes, no less, saying
Well,
that
it'd be weird if it was somewhere else.
indeed, saying that it could have been like Nikita, it could have started off with her being, a young child who's brought into the industry of doing bounty hunting, and it could have been a much more classically stylistic thing, but it's not. It's schlock. It's what I wrote down basically was redneck TV, which is I kept expecting monster trucks to like burst out at any moment.
When it first started, I was thinking this seems really familiar, but not because of it being something that I watched before. But then it kind of flashed up that it was Tony Scott, and I was like, oh yes, it's filmed in exactly the same
Same
way
way
as
as
Man
Man
on
on
Fire,
Fire.
and also has Christopher Walken in it. So we've got Christopher Walken continuity again. But this, I actually mostly really liked Man on Fire, but the directorial style and the way it's lit and the filters and
We'll
stuff
get onto that in a minute.
is very similar.
Shall we do? Oh, yeah,
It's
very
just
much
this is
so.
so much worse.
So, shall we do some facts?
Yes. It's
What?
based very loosely
Very
on a
loosely.
real bounty hunter who and there is a reality TV show. Did you get to the reality TV show?
Yes, it was very shortly after the reality TV show is the part where I stopped watching it.
Okay.
So in the film, Domino has been being a bounty hunter with her crew for a while, and she stands out because she's one of the very few female bounty hunters around.
And she's
And
also young and attractive.
yeah, and so they essentially get hunted down by some Hollywood type who says, "I want to make a film about, not film, a TV show about bounty hunters. Actually, specifically, I want to make it about Domino." I don't know how that relates to the real person whose name was Domino Harvey, and I can tell you more about her in a bit.
Yes, well, it only relates in terms of the fact that Tony Scott did actually follow her around while she tracked fugitives as research for the film. The actual, I think the reality TV bit and all of the dismembered arm and the armored car heist is nonsense. Very sadly, she died from a fentanyl overdose at 35, 4 months before the film came out,
Yeah.
which is a real shame.
So she was the daughter of apparently a famous stage and screen actor, British stage and screen actor called Lawrence Harvey, who I never heard of.
No.
So she had a relatively
But he was
pri-
presumably in The Manchurian Candidate because that's the film that the lady's watching in the trailer at the beginning, and
Oh,
somebody
plausibly.
points to the screen and goes, oh, that's your dad.
Oh, okay. But yes, so her act of rebellion, the same as Domino in the film, to being brought up in, public school and all this kind of stifling thing, is to take a job where people point guns at you a lot and you go and shoot people, which seems a
Yes.
bit of an extreme overreaction in order to get
Yeah,
away from
a little
your
bit.
daddy issues. But still, can we go back to facts?
Yes. Well, we were talking about facts.
Sorry. Shall I go through some of mine?
Sure. That was all I had.
Okay. So the screenplay is written by a guy called Richard Kelly. It's not surprising the film's a bit weird, since the main thing he's known for is writing Donnie
Ah,
Darko.
okay. Well, I
Which is good,
remember
but
thinking
very
that was very
weird.
good. I'm not
Yes.
sure I'd want to revisit it now.
I think I probably should rewatch it, since I remember thinking it was good and also not really understanding anything that was going on.
Fair. Well, you
So,
know, stick it on the list.
yeah, he also wrote a very popular film called Southland Tales. Tony Scott is the younger brother of super famous director Ridley Scott, and did at least two films that I really like. He's done a lot of different things,
Yeah.
but he did Top Gun,
Yeah.
and he did Crimson Tide, which is a film that with Denzel Washington and
Gene Hackman
being in a nuclear submarine, and that's great. I really like that.
Yeah, I mean, he has done some good stuff,
but
this is not one of them.
But as Annie pointed out, he also did Man on Fire, which I looked up just before we started recording, which we did for the podcast at the tail end of 2024. So
okay, it's longer ago than I thought.
That's exactly what I was about to say. Which
I really liked that.
Which I didn't.
No, I know
like
you didn't.
Because of mostly weird style reasons, the way it's shot.
There's
but
dismemberment in that too.
Also true, but the way that it's shot, with the way that Domino is shot and the way that Man on Fire is shot, is very similar. And
yes.
And I had the same thing as you, where I was like, I've definitely seen this before.
Yeah.
And then when I went and looked up, I was like, oh, that would be why.
Yeah.
For a film that, as we'll get onto in a second, did not do especially well, it's got an incredible cast.
Oh, I know. I'd forgotten Lucy Liu was in it.
It's got Mickey Rourke. It's got Mina Savari. It's got Monique. It's got Lucy Liu. It's got Christopher Walken. And it's obviously got a very young Keira Knightley.
Yeah.
So the cast is just like completely incredible.
It's trying so very, very hard to be incredibly cool with the way it's directed and the music and the way she smokes all the time. And oh my God, Macy Gray is in it. How much cooler can this film get? Yeah.
So we talked a bit about the inspiration. Can I just mention a couple of things?
Sure.
About reviews?
Oh yes, some of the reviews that were listed on Wikipedia were quite amusing.
So Owen Gleiberman, what a great name. From Entertainment Weekly, gave Domino a D grade, describing it as trash shot to look like art imitating trash.
Yes.
Which is a fantastic quote. And criticised the plot as so dense with Erstat's Elmore Leonard convolutions that it manages to stay three steps ahead of the audience and four steps behind common sense.
Pretty much.
Kenneth Turan in the Los Angeles Times said the film was so overplotted it's borderline completely incomprehensible, which I would
yes.
Also agree.
Indeed.
So the film completely bombed at the box office.
Deservedly so.
It made $23 million back on an estimated $50 million budget, so
wow.
It lost half its money.
Wow.
On Rotten Tomatoes, which is the like public review site, it's at 18%.
Whoa. That's really bad.
And on Metacritic, which is the professionals' review site, it's on 37%.
Wow. Okay,
so
that's higher than
so
I would have expected.
So the professionals like it slightly more, but the public,
yeah,
do not.
Yeah.
Where do you want to start? I just want to say before you start that I do have some notes that are neither in all caps or bold,
but
not
not very
many.
Fair. I don't know. I will say, right off the bat, I am going to admit my shame. The only reason I went to see this in the first place, and the only reason that I wanted to watch it again, was because I had a terrible Keira Knightley obsession around about the time, and this, for me, was peak Keira Knightley attractiveness with the bare midriff and the nunchucks, as I may have mentioned. So whilst I can criticise it for having a somewhat over-the-top male gaze, I can't really criticise it for that because that was why I was watching it in the first place. So I kind of agree with the male gaze. And I also was very pleased to see Lucy Liu because I quite like her too.
So
incredible shallow reasons for me wanting to watch this film, and I have been punished. Punished.
So,
my brain has been punished.
So we're wildly out of order, which is absolutely fine because we're always wildly out of order.
What order?
Well, because I was going to bring up.
Oh, the male gaze with
yes,
with about the women, but yes, sure.
Because
I just wanted to lay my cards on the table and be honest with the listeners. I am shamed.
Because it's obviously a film that's very much about that. One of the things that happens before I started watching the film was that Domino and her crew bust into a house that's full of people with guns, and they point guns at each other, and there's a massive standoff, and then Domino talks everybody down by giving the guy who's in charge of the people in the house all the guns a lap dance.
Yep. In her underwear.
In her underwear.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, if I give you a lap dance in front of all of these people, will you give me the information that I want?
Yes. Oh, she. You could argue that she is the one who is controlling the male gaze because she is using her wiles to manipulate people. And I'm sure that would be a very effective tactic as a bounty hunter in a lot of ways. Because she could indeed approach certain people or go to certain places or get certain reactions from people that, you know, wouldn't be expecting her to be tracking them to arrest them. That's fair enough.
There are numerous close-up shots of her backside wearing nothing but underwear.
Yeah.
But the point that I wanted to...
They also, the 90210 actors, who we'll come back to, do go to a strip club at the end, and there's quite a lot of lingering on the strippers as well. So it's not just Domino using it against people.
But the point that I wanted to raise is the line that I wrote in the middle of my notes that says, I guess at least all the objectification goes both ways, because there's quite a lot of male objectification. There's slow-mo shots
of Choco
and
taking
him
his clothes off in the laundrette.
Yes.
Fair.
Yes.
Yeah.
So although there is a lot of that about women, there's also quite a lot of that about men as well. It's just that kind of film.
True.
So I don't know if that makes it better or worse. What do you think?
I don't know. I can't be objective about that, as I've said, in this film, because that was what I was there for.
Okay.
So
can I tenuously related pick out at least one, if not two things? One of the immediate things that stood out to me in the first few seconds of this film is, what is going on with her accent?
What's wrong with her accent? That is her accent.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's incredibly, not just British, but British public school super clipped.
Yeah, that's what she actually sounded like.
Stage accent, wow.
Maybe not so much anymore, but at the time, she sounded like that.
But it's so, it stands out
plummy.
So much compared to, like, everybody else is like hardcore redneck, essentially.
Yeah.
And she is not just British, but basically the Queen. that was a thing. There's also eyeliner. She's just like all eyeliner.
And the overlapping necklaces and the low riding jeans.
But if you're, you know, running around
it's
and
so desperately, desperately up itself in terms of trying to be edgy.
But if you are running around sweating and pointing guns at people all the time, one assumes your eyeliner would be all over the place.
Yeah, also fair.
So what was gosh, what else do you want to pick out?
I mean, I don't really have that much else, really.
What do we say in the
Everyone loves a short
Everyone
show.
Everyone loves a short show.
Yeah.
So we talk a bit more about the style, maybe. So I thought there is a question of whether Tony Scott was trying to emulate Quentin Tarantino.
Oh, maybe.
Because the thing about, I'm not a huge Quentin Tarantino fan. I've only watched about half his films. I've watched his early stuff rather than his later stuff. And while I'm not a big fan because they are overly violent and because the characters in them are really horrible, I can genuinely say it's an absolute masterclass in incredibly well-made films.
Okay.
So it's not my personal cup of tea, but I can stand back and say
that's
really incredibly well-made. And they are effortlessly, that's the wrong word, because obviously he's putting a lot of effort into it, but they
are seemingly
effortlessly incredibly cool.
Okay.
And it feels like, in some ways, this is trying to reach for that, it's about violence, but it's also incredibly cool kind of thing that is Tarantino's trademark. And just
failing miserably because it's trying way too hard. Yeah.
But there's a whole thing about weird. She does a straight to camera monologue somewhere near the start.
Maybe. Well, there's a really overwrought voiceover.
There's a massively overwrought
voiceover. Unnecessary.
We mentioned earlier, there's lots of bits about repeating words. There's lots of weird coloured filters and supercut images.
Shaky cam.
A lot action. Of that kind of feels a bit sort of Starsky and Hutch 70s.
Yeah.
Which is a thing that, again, Tarantino...
Yeah, it does have kind of a 70s vibe to it, yeah, actually.
Yeah, Tarantino does a lot of 70s vibe to stuff.
Fair.
And then, yeah, her random voiceovers did not help. It was... I don't know how long it ran before it ran the credits at the start, but it was, I think, nearly 15 minutes.
I don't remember.
So there was a lot of stuff going on, and then suddenly there were credits, and I was like, what is even happening? I'm so confused. How is there a man who's had his arm sliced off who is not only still alive, but is wandering around and talking to people?
Yes, that didn't really make much sense, did it? And there was no point to it. So the whole thing with the arm made absolutely no sense, because they... needed the combination of a safe, and it was tattooed on this guy's arm, and they were at the location where the safe was, and they had the guy with the tattoo on his arm in the truck, but instead of taking him out of the truck and marching him into the place and then reading it off, or just copying it down on a piece of paper if they didn't want to take him into the place, they chopped his arm off, and there was no reason for it whatsoever.
But it's more
apart from shock value.
But it's more than that, because it turns out that they take the code to where the safe is. And it's not actually a safe. It's a padlock.
Yeah.
And with a decent pair of, like, 4-foot bolt croppers, you could crop that padlock straight off. You don't need the code at all. It's completely pointless.
Okay.
Yeah. So we get, at some point, a flashback to her being at school.
Mm.
And... there's a bit where she has a goldfish, and then she says,
My goldfish
died, and I realised that nothing lived forever, and so my solution was to become a psychopath.
Yes, pretty much. And then there was a whole goldfish motif that kept coming through, a bit like the parrot in Man on Fire.
Oh, I didn't see that at all.
The goldfish came, because she kept, every time something bad happened, there'd be a flash of a goldfish.
Oh, wow.
And then she had some goldfish in the van for some reason, and one of them died, and she was like, oh, I knew that was the moment when it was all going to go wrong.
Right, okay, I think I was out before.
Yeah,
that,
possibly.
But,
yeah, it came in the second half. Lots of goldfish motif.
But there's a bit where she goes to apply to be a bounty hunter at a bounty hunter seminar, when it turns out that the person that she eventually ends up working for was just going to take the money and not actually do the seminar.
Yeah.
And, off, and she, like, stands in front of the car and points a gun at him and stuff. But she chucks a knife at the car for this guy who's disappearing off with the money and not doing the course. And he's like, what the hell are you doing? And she's like, I've been training since I was 12.
Yeah.
With guns and knives. And I'm like... at your very...
and nunchucks.
And your...
the nunchucks. Don't forget the nunchucks.
You've been training with guns and knives at your very expensive boarding school.
Apparently. Well,
so...
probably a lot of that does go on, to be honest, very posh boarding schools. Who knows?
I've got absolutely no idea. Yeah, there was an awful lot of info dump from her in the voiceover about all of her history.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bit where suddenly there's a thing after she's joined this bounty hunter gang where it says 6 months later, and then almost immediately after 6 months later they're in a laundrette and people have taken their clothes off to sit them in the laundromat, and she turns around to one of the characters and says, why did you become a bounty hunter? I'm like, you've had 6 months to ask him and you're deciding to do it today. I'm like, what is going on?
But I mean, tonally it's all over the place as well, because you've got the dismemberment, you've got lots of running around and shouting and shooting people, and then you've got the reality TV angle where two of the actors from Beverly Hills 90210 are brought in by the production company to host the TV show themselves.
This is completely past where I got to. I haven't seen this until before.
That really took me by surprise.
I'm super keen to hear all about that, but since we're talking about the reality TV angle, Jerry Springer.
Yes. Did you see the Jerry Springer section?
So that's the last thing I watched, was the Jerry Springer section.
It went on so long.
Done. I watched about 2 minutes of Jerry Springer.
It went on so long. But we were talking about something the other day about categorization of ethnicity or something, and I went, oh, there's a, mm-hmm. a relevant section in the mm-hmm. film for the podcast for that.
That may be the exact point that I stopped watching.
Yeah, it was really bad, and it just went on forever, and there was no purpose to it, other than the fact, no, there was a purpose to it, actually. There was a purpose, because the character who went on Jerry Springer had called in sick to work. And then when she went, she worked for the DMV.
Mm-hmm.
And when she went in the next day, her boss went, I saw you on TV, you're mm-hmm. fired. And that was why she ended up getting involved in the whole armored car heist, because she needed money because her granddaughter needed an operation. And because she'd lost her job, mm-hmm. she was really desperate. And that was why she ended up getting involved in this whole ridiculous scheme. So it was relevant, but it did go on way too long, and it was wildly offensive.
But we're talking about people who are in the show, you know, you're Lucy Liu's and this, they also randomly got Jerry Springer in it. Yeah. It's just like, what is even happening? Who, I know I say this in every single show, but who the hell is this aimed at?
I have no idea.
Is it basically aimed at people who watch Jerry Springer?
Probably.
I mean, that is a whole thing.
Yeah.
So, yes, we had the whole Jerry Springer thing. Tell me about the people from 90210, because I didn't see that at all.
Well, all that happened was that they just turned up. One of them was, I think his name's Brian Austin Green. I can't remember the name of the other one, but they were Steve and David in Beverly Hills 90210. And they did it kind of like a jokey being themselves as like washed up actors that nobody remembers apart from this one show they were in. And they were the like hosts of the reality TV show, so they were doing like the interviews, and they went around with them in the truck and ended up getting various horrible things happen to them. And they were celebrity hostages for a while, and it was all completely ridiculous, but it did take me by surprise because I'd forgotten they were in it.
Okay.
And Beverly Hills 90210 is on the list for the podcast, but I'm not sure I would do that to you.
But it's all the meta-ness of it, the fact it's based on a real person, the fact that it's got real people playing themselves in it, just really weirdly bleeds the fiction elements of it all in a way that
because the Beverly Hills 90210 was a motif as well, because that was cited as the reason that Domino's mother moved them to Beverly Hills was because she was obsessed with Beverly Hills 90210, so it all kind of like comes around in a circle eventually.
It's nice that she still has a relationship with her mother, even if while she's having a nice conversation with her in her house, she's loading live rounds into guns in her mum's living room.
Yeah.
I'm like,
yeah,
that is probably not what you want to do in your mum's living room. I'm just saying. Indeed.
Oh, you missed the worst moment. So when they were on their way to wherever it was they were going, I'm not even entirely sure at which point this was, the bus crashes.
Which bus?
The big tour bus that they have, that they go around with the big teeth on the front.
I didn't see it.
Oh, it was at the beginning. What they drove up to the trailer with.
Okay.
But anyway, they were all in the truck, and there was this incredible bus crash where it flipped over multiple times and whatever, and everybody was basically fine, which was completely ridiculous. And then once they crawled out of the crashed bus, Domino and Choco had sex in the desert while everybody else was lying around screaming, being injured and stuff. And it was the worst piece of cinema I have ever seen in my life, because it was a really bad green screen effect of them having sex in the desert with the bus in the background smoking.
Wow.
And it was just awful. So be glad that you missed that.
I did, in fact, miss that.
Oh, I tell you the other thing that it was trying to be.
Mm.
The Usual Suspects. Because the whole thing is her telling the story to the FBI agent.
Oh,
and then it all turns out that she may not actually be telling the truth. And who knows what's real and what's not.
So the framing device is that she's telling everything to Lucy Liu. And Lucy Liu's job is to basically sit there and go, I think you're lying.
Yes.
And that's the only thing that she does in the entire film.
And it was very, very Usual Suspects at the end, where it's like, you have no way of knowing.
Stare at the screen and go,
what if this is real and what's not? Yeah.
You're making this up.
But of course, it's not nearly as good.
Oh dear, it's just everywhere.
Really, really appallingly bad.
I'm
very sorry.
Okay. Right, I honestly don't think I have anything else. I've got some quotes.
Okay.
She says of the guy who runs the bounty hunter group that she's in, that he's like the father I'd never had. The psychopathic, chops people's arm off father. It's like,
yeah.
You know. She says, "My agenda is to kick ass and avoid jail."
Yeah.
I've been training since I was 12. I became a bounty hunter and got lots and lots of people pointing guns at me on day one because I wanted to have a little fun in my life.
Yeah.
And the immortal, "I could feel the blood coursing through my veins."
Yeah.
We are at this level of dialogue, ladies and gentlemen.
Uh-huh.
Oh, God. Diversity?
Well, I mean, there's quite a lot of non-white characters.
Mm.
There's Choco, who is one of the bounty hunters. There's Letitia, who works in the DMV. There's Raoul, who also works in the DMV, and Macy Gray's character the same. Lucy Liu, Agent Cosgrove. Claremont, who is the bail bondsman who runs their little unit, and all of his family. So, you know, it's... and Raoul is very clearly queer-coded. Which may or may not be a bad thing, I don't know. There's quite a lot of diversity in it. Choco speaks in Spanish a lot.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right. Tell us about the chart.
Chart?
The one in the Jerry Springer show.
Oh, God. No, let's not get into that.
Okay.
I don't want to talk about that.
There is a chart.
I don't think we want to... No.
I'm just saying there's a chart that's very racially offensive.
Yeah.
Being shown by a black lady.
Yeah.
So
for humour value.
For apparently humour value. And
yeah.
Just like,
let's not get into that.
Yeah.
There's quite a lot of different types of women, and I've written down both bad and worse. But that's the same for the male characters.
Fair.
So equal opportunity, terrible people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
And I do... well, what's the question that you're supposed to ask?
I don't know.
Did I still love it?
Did you? Oh, eventually, yes.
Oh, are we not there yet?
We're not there yet.
Okay, what else have we got to do?
You say, I guess that wraps it up for this month's discussion.
Oh, so that comes before.
Yeah.
Oh, can we do Did You Still Love It first, though?
Sure. So, did you still love it?
Well, as it turns out, I will read my review from October 17th, 2005.
We've missed a bit out.
What have we missed out?
So one thing that I've just realised that we've actually completely missed out that we should have mentioned,
jumping
as normal, is that this was 2005.
Yeah.
And there was a very popular TV show called Dog the Bounty Hunter.
Really?
Yeah.
That, so popular, I've never heard of it.
That was in 2003.
Okay.
Which was a reality TV show following a bounty hunter.
Oh,
around,
okay.
And, you know, seeing him getting...
well, that isn't involved. Where this came from, because Tony Scott had been working on this for like 12 years or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's really interesting, because I assumed that the film was... running off the back of the popularity of that. Maybe that's why they got the money.
Maybe.
But
so it may have had something to do with it, yeah.
Yeah, but there's definitely a, like, I can't remember what the, because it like Cops, the show in America,
oh,
they,
yeah. Yeah.
And I was, for reasons that are complicated, watching Channel 5 yesterday, and there's lots of adverts for following people around in an ambulance and stuff in reality
yeah.
TV style. So there's obviously a thing for it, and I wondered whether Dog the Bounty Hunter had fed into it. Yeah. Did you, in fact, still love it?
Well, as it turns out, I'm going to read my original review from October 17th, 2005,
wow.
Which is going to prove that this was actually ineligible. It says... I went to see Domino last night. The evening started really well since I handed over my Empire subscriber discount card and received a free cinema ticket in return. Now, I've never been sure what discount the Empire card actually gives me, but I'm quite certain it's not supposed to be 100%. And every single time I took that
uh-huh.
card to a cinema, I got people going, we've no idea what this is, and people
uh-huh.
would try and look it up. They would either give me some kind of discount, give me a free ticket, I think
uh-huh.
that happened twice, or... what are you talking about? We don't know what this is. Go away. And it was a complete lottery. And this time I got in for absolute free. On to the review. I went to see this film purely to see Keira Knightley being a bounty hunter. Provocative clothing and varied weaponry, woohoo. Having sat through 2 hours, I wish there could have been more of this and also more than this. While the delightful Miss Knightley did spend most of the film prancing about in provocative outfits, brandishing an assortment of guns and other weapons, the nunchucks were a standout highlight. It was difficult to fully appreciate her, as the camera work was often so jerky and blurred that it was hard to even tell what was going on, let alone drool over the protagonist. The film exhibited the extreme of the current style of action direction that I hate, placing the camera right inside the action sequences so as to give the audience the feeling that they're really there. In my opinion, all this does is make the scene confusing and nausea-inducing. I prefer to be able to view action from afar so as to be able to appreciate its choreography. On top of this, the script was weak, the plot disjointed, and the characters underdeveloped. The film was so focused on looking cool and being noisy that it neglected everything else, and it was hard to become emotionally involved in it at all. Overall, it was worth the admission price, but not much more. Sadly, it won't be added to my Keira Knightley DVD collection. So, I didn't love it before, and I didn't love it now. I'm very, very sorry.
Okay.
We're all here under a false premise.
Fair.
But I guess that wraps it up. No, that's you.
No, that's you.
So I guess that about wraps it up for this month's discussion. It's time for the ratings. We use a standard 5-star rating system. We're not going to need that many. With half stars allowed. Dave, what is your rating for Domino, dare I ask?
Oh,
you don't get to rate it because you DNF'd it. You don't get to rate DNFs.
Don't you?
No, not in my view.
I want to rate it anyway.
Oh, go on.
I was going to give it a half.
Okay. Okay, fair.
And you?
I'm going to give it 1.5.
Wow.
But the whole extra star is just for the bear midriff and the nunchucks. And I am sorry, listeners, that I'm being really shameful about this, but I can't help it.
No,
there we
can.
Go. I'm only human. So, yes, that's it. Dare I ask, what are you going to do to me in revenge? As your choice next month, or are you going to pick something so that we can have something nice and fun to watch that we'll both enjoy? Please, please. Okay. We're back to feuding, are we?
It's not feuding.
Okay. I wouldn't blame you. This was awful.
It's a film that I think is really good.
Uh-huh.
Or I thought was really good.
Uh-huh.
But may actually, again, be terrible. And it's not Sweet and Lovely because people do dine it.
Okay.
But it's the 2001 animated film Final Fantasy Spirits Within.
Oh, okay. I've never seen it. Isn't that the one with like the Uncanny Valley creepy nearly real animation style?
I am probably better off not answering that question.
Oh, no. Okay. Whatever.
Right. On which note... that is the end of this month's episode of Will You Still Love It Tomorrow. Many thanks to Cambo for our theme music, as ever, and thank you for listening. If you like the show, please rate and review it wherever you get your podcasts, just not for half a star.
And if you have any comments, or if you want to tell us about a time you shared some media you love and whether or not you still loved it afterwards, you can email us at willyoustilloveit@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. And we actually did get an email from somebody the other day after our Robin of Sherwood episode.
Ooh.
So thank you very much, listener, for writing in. The listener gave a few recommendations of shows they'd like to see us do, but sadly all but one of them and neither of us had seen. But I may put the other one on the list, but I'm not going to say what it is now.
Cool. You can follow us on Blue Sky at still-love-it.bsky.social.
And you can buy our merch at bit.ly/loveittomorrowpodcast with hyphens where the spaces should be.
So join us next time to find out what Annie thinks of Final Fantasy Spirits Within.
And whether or not Dave still loves it after our discussion.
Bye-bye.
Bye.